Welcome to Beyond the Bedroom. I am your host, Natalie, and I'm so thrilled to be bringing you this episode of my little podcast. Now, before we start, and as always, remember that this is not an alternative for professional therapy. So if you or someone that you love needs help, contact me for expert guidance or reach out to another therapist in your local area. Over the next 8 episodes, we'll unpack the challenges, shifts, and emerging trends in love, intimacy, relationships, faith, culture, and absolutely everything in between. So let's get right into it. Welcome back to Going Beyond the Bedroom. You're here with me, Natalie, and we're diving into episode 5 of season 1. Today, we're talking about breakups, divorce, and the art of letting go. Let's be real, no one walks into a relationship thinking about how it will end. But endings do happen, sometimes in slow, painful declines, sometimes in one text message. Whether it's the breakup of a whirlwind romance, the unraveling of a decade-long marriage, or the unexpected death of a partner, letting go is an art, and often a brutal one. In today's episode, we're talking about the kind of pain no one wants, but almost everyone will face. We'll unpack why breakups hurt like hell, when it's worth fighting for love, and when it's time to walk away with dignity intact. And just so you know, I've created a special B-side companion episode where I get into real stories. You'll hear from people who have loved, lost, and dared to love again. But for now, here's the core of what we're unpacking today. Why do breakups hurt so much? Let's start with the big question. Why are breakups so excruciating? Here's the thing. Your brain doesn't know the difference between a broken heart and a broken leg. I am serious. Studies show that the same region of the brain light up during heartbreak as they do during physical pain. We're not just sad, we're in actual physiological distress. Heartbreak triggers cortisol spikes, inflammation, and yes, even withdrawal symptoms, according to Fisher et al. In 2016, Cross et al. In 2017, and DeWall in 2010. I remember reading that for the first time and feeling this strange relief, like, oh, so I wasn't just being dramatic after that split that had me in bed for 3 weeks straight? We often underestimate how chemical love is. It's dopamine, oxytocin, neural reward systems lighting up like fireworks. So when the bond breaks, it's like trying to detox from a substance you've become dependent on. And if you're someone who's experienced deep attachment, especially anxious or trauma-bonded dynamics, it can feel like being ripped apart at the seams. I talk about this a lot in therapy. Early stage bonding in relationships can create a near obsessive craving for connection, and that same craving turns into withdrawal when separation hits. You start wondering, am I going crazy? Why do I still want someone who hurt me so much? It's not madness, it's neurobiology. It's attachment. And then there's the mind games we play with ourselves. Rumination, idealization, rewriting the past. I've had clients say, I know it's toxic, but I miss them. And honestly, I've said that myself. You too, right? It's normal. It's common. In moments of grief, even dysfunction starts to look nostalgic. We also love who we are in relationships. Breakups don't just break the bond. They shake our identity. Who am I without them? What do I do now? These questions hit hard, especially after long-term relationships where lives and routines were deeply intertwined. Some of us stay longer than we should, not because we don't know it's over, but because letting go would mean letting go of a version of ourselves that existed with that person. That's terrifying. And let's not forget the cultural baggage. In the West, we're taught that failed relationships are personal failures. Cue shame, self-blame, and trying to fix ourselves like we're somehow broken. Meanwhile, Eastern cultures lean more into collective healing and community-based grieving. Honestly, maybe they are onto something. And then, oh, the joy of social media. Nothing like seeing your ex's holiday pics with someone new while you're still crying into your cereal. Research confirms what we already know in our bones. Digital proximity prolongs emotional distress. And yet, we keep scrolling, torturing ourselves in silence. So what's the takeaway here? Breakups aren't just emotional. They're neurobiological, psychological, and cultural. They shape the foundations of our identity and well-being. But understanding the why behind the pain, that's the first step toward healing. So let's navigate the stages of a breakup. Let's talk about the emotional roller coaster that comes with after the it's over. Because healing isn't a straight line. It's not a checklist. It's a spiral staircase. You circle through the same emotions over and over until one day the sting softens. The Kubler-Ross model, the classic five stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, applies to romantic loss too. But no one tells you that they don't show up in order. One day you feel okay, the next you're crying into your steering wheel over a playlist you forgot they were on, the next you're just so angry that you don't know what to do. Grief after love is weird. You can be fine all week and then get emotionally wrecked in aisle five at the supermarket because you passed their favorite biscuits. It's like that. And you know what? It's normal. It's common. But here's what isn't always helpful. How we try to fast forward through it. We rush into rebound relationships thinking someone new will fill the gap. We stay busy, stacking our calendars like emotional armor. We bottle up feelings because, well, who wants to be that person who's still talking about their ex 3 months later, right? And if we don't face the pain, it festers. Suppressed grief doesn't vanish. It just leaks out sideways. In anxiety, in bitterness, in choosing emotionally unavailable people over and over again. And our beloved social media doesn't help. Let's be honest. Again, when you see your ex thriving online and you're still raw, that hits hard. Studies back it up. Keeping tabs on prolonged emotional distress doesn't help. But it's addictive, right? It's like some masochistic ritual. Scroll, hurt, repeat, scroll, hurt, repeat, scroll, hurt. You get the idea. Muting, unfollowing, creating digital boundaries. These are tiny but powerful steps. You don't have to block them out of anger. You can do it out of self-preservation. Then comes the age-old question. Should we stay friends with our ex? Honestly, that depends. In situations where children are involved or mutual circles are in play, it gets complicated. But jumping into friendship too soon can delay closure. Sometimes the most loving thing you can do for yourself and for them is to step away, to grieve what was and to give space for what might be. And what about our special word, closure? It gets thrown around a lot. People chase that one final conversation, hoping it'll tidy up their heartbreak like a well-written ending. But here's the truth. Closure isn't something someone else gives you. It's something that you create for yourself. Journaling, therapy, spiritual grounding, honest reflection. These are tools that help you make peace without needing an ex to sign it off. And I'll be real, doing your own work is often the most confronting part of the process, but it's also the most transformative too. There's no shortcut through this. You have to feel to heal. Gosh, that sounds so cliche. But it's true. And if you're deep in it right now, please remember, the breakdown is part of the breakthrough. Every spiral, every setback is shaping you into someone stronger, clearer, more aligned. What about divorce? Divorce is a different kind of heartbreak. Let's move into a more layered, more complex kind of separation, which is divorce. Breakups are hard, right? But divorce? Divorce comes with paperwork, property, parenting plans, and a whole pile of emotions that don't get neatly filed away with the final decree. It's not just the heartbreak, it's the entanglement. You're not just saying goodbye to a person, you're dismantling a whole life. Schedules, savings, school runs, even shared Netflix passwords. Suddenly, everything is up for negotiation. In the middle of that legal, logistical chaos, you're just trying to keep your sanity intact. And if children are involved, the emotional weight triples. Now you're navigating your own grief while trying to create a soft landing for your children. Co-parenting adds another layer of complexity. It demands maturity, patience, and communication at a time when you probably feel the most depleted. But here's something that we don't often talk about enough: the spiritual fracture of divorce. Marriage, especially in Christian or faith-based communities, isn't just a contract, it's a covenant, a sacred union. And when that breaks, there's a kind of grief that lives beyond the practical. It's the kind of thing that keeps people up at night wondering, did I fail God? Did I fail myself? The moment the judge signs off that decree nisi, it can feel like the gavel dropping on your identity. For many, it triggers shame, regret, and this internal question of, what if I just tried harder? Or, did I give up too soon? And yet, in the same breath, we're now seeing things like divorce parties trending online, as if celebrating the end of a marriage is the natural next step. Now, don't get me wrong, I understand the desire to reclaim your power, but it worries me that we're skipping over the grief part in favor of a quick rebrand. Here's something controversial. Maybe breakups should be honored, but not just as freedom, also as endings, as grief, as growth. Maybe we need ritual, not rebellion. Because the truth is, many people experience something no one likes to admit: divorce regret. Studies suggest a growing number of people feel it, especially in the first 2 years post-divorce, according to an ONS survey in 2023. And you rarely hear about it, because once you've made the decision, especially publicly, it feels like you're not allowed to question it. And let's not even get started on culture. In some communities, divorce is still taboo. The shame is real. The silence is loud. But in other cultures, like Scandinavia, co-parenting post-divorce has become the norm, and the emotional impact on families is drastically reduced. So what does that tell us? That it's not just what happens, but how we hold it, how our society frames it, whether we allow people to grieve, grow, and rebuild, or whether we label them failures and leave them to process it alone. Because here's the hopeful truth: divorce can be a doorway. It can be the beginning of reinvention, of rediscovery. According to Relate UK, 68% of divorced individuals say they feel happier and more fulfilled after healing. But that healing takes work. Reclaiming who you are, rebuilding a life from the ashes of what was, finding independence again, reclaiming your self-worth, and if you choose, opening your heart to love again, with more wisdom, more clarity, and more courage. Now, this next one is different. The death of a partner, love, loss, and trying to move forward. Because while breakups and divorce are painful, losing a partner to death is a completely different kind of grief. It's not just the end of a relationship, it's the end of a shared life. And there's no going back, no chance for reconciliation, no final text to unsend or reframe. It's final, and it's devastating. The grief that comes with death sits in a deeper place. It's not just emotional, it's existential. It unravels everything you thought you knew about life, love, and what it means to be human. And neuroscience backs this up. Studies show that bereavement grief activates different parts of the brain than romantic heartbreak. The regions linked to deep sadness, yearning, and meaning-making light up like alarm bells. And if you've been there, you know this isn't just missing someone. It's the physical ache of absence. The oxytocin and dopamine systems the same ones that made love feel safe and secure, go into disarray. The body responds with fatigue, immune suppression, even heart irregularities. Yes, you can die of a broken heart. And many people have come terrifyingly close, according to studies in 2010. Then there's the identity shift. When you've been we for years or decades, suddenly being I again feels foreign. After the funeral, after the sympathy cards stop coming and the homemade dishes stop arriving, you're left with silence, with the empty side of the bed, with routines that once brought comfort now becoming painful reminders of what's been lost. And let's not overlook the guilt, especially when it comes to moving forward. I can't imagine dating again. What will people think if I do? Does loving someone new mean I've forgotten the one that I've lost? These are questions I've heard countless times, and sometimes people decide they'd rather stay alone than risk that internal conflict or the potential of loss again. But here's what I often see. You're not replacing love. You're continuing your story. In many faith-based and cultural contexts, the mourning process is communal. Traditions like Shiva in Judaism, Chesa in Hinduism, and Islamic mourning periods offer structured space to grieve, remember, and transition. And honestly, there's something beautiful in that. In the West, we often grieve in private. We whisper our pain, we try to be strong. But strength isn't silence, and healing doesn't mean you stop loving the person you've lost. It means you learn to carry them differently. For some, therapy or support groups help hold that space. Others find meaning through volunteering, mentoring, or writing letters to the ones that they've lost. There's no right way to grieve, but there is a way to honor the love that you had and allow yourself to keep living. And when love finds its way back to you, you don't owe anyone an explanation. Love after loss isn't betrayal, it's bravery. So if you've lost someone, you're not alone. Your grief is valid, your peace is your own, and one day, when you're ready, if you're ready, you'll find a way to hold the love you had and open yourself to what could be. What's the art, then, of letting go and moving forward? After everything we've explored, from breakups and divorce to the devastating loss of a partner, you might be wondering, how do we actually move forward? How do we let go when our hearts feel tethered to the past? Whether it's letting go of someone we broke up with, someone we divorced, or someone we lost to death, there's a shared truth underneath it all. Grief changes us, but it doesn't have to destroy us. And I know this might sound strange, especially after the heaviness of that last segment, but this is where I'm about to get quite nerdy. Quick disclaimer, I've never been good at maths, but if I had to create a formula for the art of letting go, it would look something like this. L equals A plus open bracket P multiplied by T close bracket minus R plus G. Right, let me break that down. L is letting go. This is the process of releasing emotional attachment and stepping forward into what's next. L equals A. Acceptance. This means acknowledging reality as it is without denial or rewiring. Plus P, processing, which is the hard but necessary work of sitting with your own emotions, grief, sadness, anger, without numbing or running. Multiplied by T, which stands for time, reminding us that healing is not linear. You can't rush it. Then you need to take away R, or rumination, the loop of what ifs, should haves, and mental replaying that slows us down. Finally, we want to add in G, growth and new purpose. Oh, okay, I cheated there a little bit. But this is what emerges when we choose to find meaning in the mess, when we start to imagine again. Putting it together looks like this. Letting go means having acceptance, processing over time all of the feelings that you have, and letting go of rumination while making room for growth and finding new purpose. And this isn't just a cute formula. There's research to back it up. Acceptance is foundational in emotional resilience. It's what allows us to stop fighting reality and start engaging with it. Studies show that acceptance-based mindfulness reduces distress after a breakup. It doesn't mean giving up, it means releasing resistance. Processing over time is where the magic happens, but also where it hurts the most. Grief, when honored and not rushed, transforms us. I've had clients ask me if they were bad people for not wanting their marriage anymore. And I always ask, what makes you feel that way? Who told you that leaving meant failure? We have to rewrite this narrative. And rumination is the silent killer of peace. Replaying old conversations, wondering what you could have done differently, is natural, but also draining. The more we loop, the more stuck we stay. Learning to interrupt that cycle takes practice, but it's one of the most powerful tools for healing. Finally, growth. That's the beautiful part. Post-traumatic growth is real. People who move through deep loss often emerge with greater self-awareness, resilience, and clarity. It doesn't make the pain disappear, but it gives the pain purpose. So, what does applying this look like in real life? Accept what has happened. Grieve the dream, the person, the life you thought you had. Process your emotions. Cry, write, rage, pray, scream into a pillow if you need to. Give yourself time. Stop rushing your healing. There is no timeline. Catch the rumination. When your mind spirals, pause, breathe, redirect. Pursue growth. Explore something new. Reconnect with yourself. Find your what now. And yes, there are practical ways to support this process. Therapy, journaling, breathwork, movement, sleep, nourishment, changing your environment, finding new hobbies, building new communities, sometimes even joining a new church or job, if you can. And if it helps, to create distance from the emotional landmines of the past. And please, don't underestimate the power of choosing peace over proximity. Sometimes the most healing thing you can do is to create space, especially when seeing your ex or reminders of your old life keeps reopening the wound. Another powerful aspect of letting go, finding closure within yourself. That doesn't mean excusing harm or romanticizing pain. It means asking, which part did I play? What am I responsible for? And what do I want to do differently next time? Because self-awareness is the beginning of every healthier relationship you'll have moving forward, including and especially the one you have with yourself. And speaking of future relationships, let's talk about love again. You're not broken. You're not used up. You're not too old, too much, or too complicated. I truly believe that. But I also believe in learning from the past without letting it define your future. Watch out for what I call the carried over trap, which is when you start treating new partners like they're guilty of your ex's sins. It's human, but it's harmful. Every relationship deserves a clean slate, and so do you. So take your time, stay open, stay grounded, be wise, yes, but also curious. You might just find that love in a new form is still available to you. And who knows, you might even enjoy the journey of rediscovering it. Because the art of letting go, it's really about remembering who you are. When you're not trying to hold on to what no longer serves you. Here are some final thoughts. Firstly, letting go isn't erasing, it's evolution. It isn't about pretending it didn't happen or deleting the photos and memories as if they never existed. It's about making peace with what was without letting it define what comes next. It's a choice to move forward without bitterness, but with wisdom, not with fear, but strength. Because you can carry the lessons without carrying the weight. In closing, what have we really explored today? I've talked about the sting of breakups, the layers of divorce, the ache of widowhood, and the beautiful, messy process of letting go. And while none of these roads are easy, they are all invitations to reflect, to heal, to grow, to rediscover who you are without the titles, the labels, or the we. Breakups and divorce don't have to mean defeat. They can be the doorway to deep transformation. Healing isn't a destination, it's a spiral, a dance, a reclaiming. Letting go doesn't mean forgetting, it means moving forward with clarity, courage, and self-respect. So now it's your turn to go beyond the bedroom, and this time go inward. Here are your journal prompts or reflection questions. If you're in the middle of heartbreak or on the other side of it, what's one small step you can take today to reclaim a part of yourself that you lost in the relationship? Think back to a past love or relationship. What did it teach you? Would you thank your ex-partner for the growth? If not yet, could you imagine doing so in the future? Write a letter to yourself, asking these questions and seeing what happens. And of course, as usual, let me know your thoughts. I always love hearing your stories and reflections because the best conversations are the ones that we actually have. You can connect with me over social media using my handle at LTASTherapy or visit my website www.ltas.uk for resources and updates. And if anything that you've heard today has impacted you, be free to drop me a line and let me know. If you or a loved one is going through some challenge today, why don't you reach out for a free discovery call or find a therapist in your local area? And will you join me on my next episode of Going Beyond the Bedroom? Our topic will be the therapy boom. Can therapy save your relationship? I'll dive into why more couples than ever are turning to therapy. And whatever, whether it's a lifeline or a last resort, I want to know whether therapy can actually help you grow together or just stretch out the goodbye. Will you join me for that one?
If you like what you've heard so far, please subscribe, rate, and review Beyond the Bedroom. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend so that I can continue to bring these important conversations to life. Why don't you follow me on social media? My handle is at LTAS Therapy. That's at LTAS Therapy. For those in the know, that's Let's Talk About Sex. And subscribe for behind-the-scenes thoughts and discussions on my B-side. I'll catch you next time as we continue rethinking modern love. But until then, let's talk about it.